Greetings, everyone, and welcome to our Merdeka Day special right here on Great People TV. You're with me, Ben Ibrahim. I'd like to start our show by wishing all Malaysians in Malaysia and overseas a Selamat Hari Merdeka. Today, our guest is Encik Jalan Rashid, who is the former CEO of Berjaya and PNB. But before we go any further, as usual, please support our social media platforms on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. So without further ado, welcome, Jalil.
Now, Jalil, the reason I invited you onto Great People TV, if I'm being honest, because I've always seen you as a talented Malaysian that really, really developed their career overseas. And let's be honest, when one works overseas, the pay is much, much better. The access to other geographic locations is good, which is not just good for you professionally, but for your family as well. But after all those years of being overseas, what made you came back and say, Merdeka, I want to help Malaysia?
Yeah, it's a commonly asked question. For me, it's because I had quite a privileged career in the sense that, you know, I joined my first firm at a point that they were in a growth stage. So there were multiple opportunities for me to move around different countries when the firm was establishing a new office. I was involved in a lot of the mergers and acquisitions as well. So I was sent for projects in other countries to kind of merge the entity. So I've got, over the 17 years I was in fund management, it felt like I almost had five different jobs, having done different things. But that also meant that I did have quite a faster rise relative to most people, you know, being made CEO at the age of 26. And then by the time I was about 37 years old, I was already running an Asia Pacific business, and I was running a global investment team. So I guess the next question comes is that, you know, what's next? And I was asking that question, but what have I created? You know, what impact am I leaving beyond the fact that I was proud of my own career? And that was the time this PNB job came. And obviously, that was on the wave of a euphoria of a lot of things that had happened the year before during the elections. And initially, I had turned the job down twice because I just felt, oh, I had to take a massive pay cut to take this job. I have to uproot a family that was raised in Singapore. But after turning down the job twice, I told my wife that, you know, this is one of those things that at the age of 50, when I look back at my career, I would regret not taking this for the rest of my life. Because, you know, obviously as quite a patriotic Malaysian as well, I was, you kind of see how things are run and you say, oh my God, you know, I feel that it could be better. And this role that was offered to me allowed me, in a very small way, relative to maybe other roles, to make things a bit better. And hence why I came back, because I wanted to make that change. I wanted to make that impact, which I wouldn't have gotten elsewhere overseas in a foreign firm. So it was like all the combined years of experience being put in practice towards making, I guess, PNB better, and in as an extension of that, corporate Malaysia better as well.
Fantastic. And when you came back to Malaysia, it was a very different Malaysia. For the very first time in Malaysian history, then 2018, it was a new government. So based on that, tell us about the job itself, the political expectations, and the new things that you'll bring in. Because I heard a lot of positive news when you came in that you brought in flexible working, work from home, and colorful socks.
I guess when news finally did break out that I was leaving Singapore to come back, you know, I think there were divergence of views and thoughts. Friends in Singapore were split in half. There was one group of them, very patriotic Malaysians, who were saying, fantastic, you know, someone like you is going where, someone not in the system, someone completely plucked up from the outside, fresh perspective, fresh impetus. Then there was another group of Malaysians who said, are you mad? Why are you leaving this, your life here, you know, well-paying job, you know, working with an international firm and going back there? But I said, look, you know, I don't want to be the one, you know, being an armchair critique, you know, so I am going out there and putting myself out there. Then when I came back to Malaysia, the expectation of the job only hit me on the day my appointment was announced publicly. I remember being back in KL and I was staying at a hotel. The next morning when I came down for breakfast, everybody started looking at me and I was wondering what on earth is happening. And then I realized that my face was all over the newspapers and people recognized, you know, and knew my name. And that's when the weight of that role's expectation really hit me, that it is a very public job and life would change drastically for me. Before I took on the job, you know, obviously I spoke to my board of directors, but I had requested a meeting with the then Prime Minister, Tun Mahathir, for a while, because obviously the Prime Minister is the chairman of the Yayasan Pelaburan Bumi Putra, which is the ultimate shareholding company, shareholder of PNB. And we had just about 20-minute meeting, and you know, it was more of a get-to-know-you kind of discussion. And at the end, he said, "What is it that you need from us to make you successful in this job?" And I said, "I don't need to be told how to do the job. I don't want anyone telling me how to do my job. All I need from you is air cover, because a lot of decisions that would be made may not necessarily go down entirely quite well. And you will hear about it. Other people will hear about it. Just make sure that, you know, as a shareholder, you give me the right sort of protection." And to be fair, I think that was given. And it was a wonderful journey. People always talk about culture. How are the people good? I can say hand to heart, PNB staff are one of the best I've ever worked with. You know, incredibly talented, smart people. And I think they just needed a different kind of leadership to kind of unleash themselves. You know, and I enjoyed it. But also, I brought a different perspective to working. You know, it was a bit rigid and structured. You know, things like an executive lift, for example, which I deactivated. You know, I didn't feel the need for me to have my own lift. You know, I made accessibility to the CEO much more easier. We reviewed the pay of the entire organization because I didn't want to be criticizing about minimum wage and how Malaysia doesn't pay people well. But I was in that position to increase the wages. So we actually paid minimum wage way above 3,000 ringgit, even to the lowest, to the non-executive staff. So we did a lot of work there in terms of culture, wages, way of working. We had flexi work working way before COVID happened. As we were preparing to move to the new building in 118, we also designed a very fun place to work. And all this was quite important given that the average age of the staff was 39 years old. So they were almost my age. So I think they did want a different impetus and perspective towards that. The other interesting thing was dress code. We completely relaxed that. As people know, I'm not a big fan of wearing suits. I wore batik every day with my coloured socks. We said, look, you don't need to wear a jacket. You know, just wear what's comfortable. Most importantly is that we treat you as adults. We're not going to regulate what time you come in, what time you leave, what you wear. But you have a job. You have to deliver it within a time frame. And how you do that, it's up to you.
Very, very positive indeed. And speaking about positives, just the last question about the PNB job. When we work for wins. What would probably be your greatest win at PNB? I know it's hard to select one.
I think one is that in that short space of time, we change the way the investment modeling works. Because for an investment firm, the core that you work with is your investment modeling. It's what we call strategic asset allocation. It's like how many percent of your money should be going into this asset. How many percent should be overseas? How do you mitigate risk? All that is part of a broader investment philosophy, investment framework. So we completely ripped the paper and rewrote that in a very quick space of time. But it was also designed in a way that it was very dynamic in the sense that if situation were to change externally, we don't need to go back to the drawing board. You know, it was dynamic and fluid enough to change by itself. Then we also thought about risk. What can go wrong tomorrow and how do we mitigate that? What if our currency depreciates by 50, 100%. Are we, how do we hedge that? So all that framework was all put in place, was anchored and cast in stone in a way. And then, of course, then we also had an investment framework for how our investee company should behave in the right practice. One of those things was actually disallowing active office bearers to take on board positions in companies. So all that was done in a relative short space of time. I felt that that was the foundations that were required, right? Because if you don't have the foundation, you can't build the house. So there was no point building a fancy house when we didn't have the foundation in place. When you have a strong foundation, whoever comes in into that position later can just build upon that.
Fantastic. And when you left PNB, you went to the Berjaya Group, a private company, a very successful company, but also a family company. Tell us about that adventure.
Yeah, so that was quite a left field one. Very left field. After I left PNB and I was taking some time off, and it was also at the height of COVID. At that point, it was like mid-2020 when I think the whole world was kind of grappling in uncertainty, not knowing how to deal with it. I had already planned to move back to Singapore by then, but, you know, borders were closed and we're staying here. And then I got put in touch with Tan Sri Winston in a way, a conversation that started about football initially, then morphed into something else. And then when he did offer me the job again, like PNB, I had actually said, you know what? Not really something I would want to take on, but he was very, very insistent. And anyone who has met him before knows that he's quite charming.
Yes.
So when I took that on, I was it was a very different one. You know, I was I joked to people I was a diversity hire. So I was a minority leading a group of majorities there in a very different culture, in a culture where there were significantly much more older people. And older people who had been there for nearly three decades, right, that had, in a way, more social capital than I had. But it was also a massive turnaround. For me, you know, I get driven by challenges. You know, I'm just an absolute challenger junkie when it comes to that. When people say, oh, you can't do it, you can't turn it around, I'm I'm 300% even more motivated to take it on. You know, what was deemed as an impossible job to kind of turn the group around, I turned it around. But I took on the job in a time-limited capacity. I had told Tan Sri Winston that, you know, I'm not going to do this for a long time. Let's give it about 12 months or so. Let's see whether I like you, you like me. And, you know, it is something that we can do longer term. But, you know, for me, obviously, I wanted to do something else longer term. But this was an interesting thing to do and turn it around. And, of course, it had so many interesting businesses, you know, the 7-Elevens and the Starbucks and the football clubs, telcos, everything.
Yeah.
And we turned the group around to profitability. We put all the, what I would say, plumbing and wiring in place, the right governance structure, and again, building a bit of that necessary foundation to take the group into growth mode. How I had seen that role is that I had bucketed in three categories. The first category was legacy, things that had happened before I joined, which required a different way of management. Then there were the fixing, which is what I was there for. And then after that is done, is the growing. So you can't do the growing without addressing legacy and fixing. So I was very methodological. And as you would probably gather by now, that's probably my thought process in all my jobs, you know, going in there and kind of having a helicopter view of the business and then trying to categorize things and manage it differently.
Yeah, you seem like a very systemic, structured person who's quite easy to follow. However, you were there for a super, super short time. You don't mind me asking, why did you want to move on? Because in the media, when you said I'm moving on to restart my other company, Career Break Sinder and Berhad.
Yeah. So I think the pandemic had a thing to do with it. I had been working non-stop since I was 21 years old. And I never really had a break except that usual annual leave that you had.
Yeah,
and after I left Aberdeen and joined Invesco, in between, I only had 3 weeks, but I had to move countries in 3 weeks. So it wasn't necessarily a holiday. Then I went straight in and work consumed me. And between Invesco and PNB, I had 3 weeks as well, again, to move countries. And then in between PNB and Berjaya, I had probably about 2-3 months. But, you know, it wasn't really a break. It was quite mentally tough because it was in the midst of the lockdown. You know, I was at home. I was not making connections. And for someone social like me, you know, that was absolute torture. And after I had COVID and I was spending so much time, I think Berjaya consumed a lot of my time. In terms of its vast array of business, you know, the sort of stakeholder engagement that was required as well. I felt that I was also not spending enough time with the family and there was, I think in March this year, the whole family was down with COVID. My daughter told me that, I actually like you like this. And I said, why? You know, and she said, you're actually at home and, you know, you're in a good mood. So I think that is when I think I had a bit of a inflection point, and then saying that maybe I should take some time off. And in a way, I had taken the job in a time limited tenure anyway. And as that time approached, that 1 year approach, I kind of told the board that I will step away. I have achieved what I wanted to do, which was to turn the group around, and let me take some time off and reassess what I want to do. Because I wasn't quite keen to go back into financial services as well. And I wanted to kind of explore doing something else. So the time was right. I think over years, one thing that I've learned is that knowing exactly what you set out to achieve and having a timeline for that is very important. Because as you're in this leadership position, the easy thing would be to kind of stay on and overstay. And I didn't want to be an ineffective CEO that way.
Well, you took the word right out of my mouth. Football. I can see you in football management because you love the game, you love the sport, you're involved with FAM, which is a very, let's be very honest, it's not an easy organization to be part of because a lot of people, a lot of VIPs want to be part of FAM to try to change football in Malaysia, but everybody has an idea. So tell us about that love of the beautiful game.
No, I've always loved football from a very, very young age, from school, just like every boy, you kind of grow up wanting to be a professional footballer, but you know pretty early
Me
on
too.
Whether you, yeah, but you know pretty early on whether you have it or you don't, right? You know, I was a decent footballer, not good enough to go pro. I had a huge interest in football, you know, obviously following Liverpool, all the other teams. And as years went by, I was very fascinated about how football finances work, you know, more driven out of curiosity. I guess that was more my fund manager training, you know. Yeah. So I think that was my fund management training where my job was essentially to go and look for investments, you know. And in part of that is that we meet a lot of these owners, CEOs, chairmen, and ask about how do you run your business? What makes you better? What makes you profitable? In my free time, I research clubs, the financing structure of leagues, and that. So I was very fascinated by it. So it was actually in my conversation with Tan Sri Vincent, our first conversation, the first time we met, and I said that, I think you've spent a lot of money on Cardiff, and he says, how much do you think I spent? So when I mentioned the amount, he was quite taken back by it. He said, how come you know? I said, well, I've done some research. And I said, I think you could have spent X amount instead. And that got the conversation going. So obviously, I was talking to him about football. And that's when I was appointed at Berjaya, I chaired the clubs, the three clubs, the one in Belgium, UK, and Bosnia. I guess it's part of that work. I also saw about how football financing works, you know, the difference in different countries, what makes certain countries far more successful, what makes US such a successful case study in anything sports related, and why certain Asian countries have not made that step up, right? So I fraternized a lot with people in other leagues and were just trying to understand that. So when FAM offered me to be part of the presidential task force. You know, I thought, you know, I can. I mean, it's not a platform where I have decision making capacity, but you know, I give my advice as the name suggests. Happy to share my experience there. So, I mean, it's obviously something I would love to continue being involved in, whether it's FAM or any other clubs, because I just have huge interest in it.
Well,
it's an absolute privilege. I said, you know, growing up, when I went into my corporate career, I said there are two industries that I would love to be involved in before I end my career. One was cars, another one was football. And I actually achieved that before I reached 40 because I was also involved in a luxury car company called HR Owen, which is owned by Berjaya, and also football club. So I did say that I lived a boy's dream. You know.
So is your next job or career move or your next company that you're going to be a CEO of, or you're going to be a chairman of or advisor of, is it a sports-related business? Sorry, I had to ask that question.
It's not a sports-related business. An announcement will be made in the next few days, I think. And it's a bit different. It's a role that would utilize all the skills I have accumulated: strategy, business development, building teams. I would be running an advisory firm globally. That would be advising foreign governments on policies. So you know that is a bit of a different job, but I'd say not too much difference, because you know, in my 17 years as a fund manager, we did spend a lot of time with governments trying to understand how they make policies and how that would affect our own investments in companies. So I've just kind of moved up a bit, one level up. But you know that job would still allow me to be involved in football should that opportunity arise. You know, I think football is something I would love to be involved in an advisory capacity,
right?
Wherever my knowledge is needed. But I said that I wanted to complete a CEO trifecta of sorts, which is to have run a private company, public, and later non-profit.
Right. Well, congratulations on that role, and we've learned that everything that we need to do is all about continuity, whether it's sports, yes, government, and everything. So that magical C word, it's more important than capital sometimes. But the final question, Jalil, the message to all our viewers, your family, your friends, your ex-colleagues, your current colleagues, your ex-bosses, your current bosses, in terms of this Merdeka spirit, and also what you said today, that looking after one's mental health and looking after one's recovery is so, so important in this day and age.
Yeah, so I think my message is that I think a lot of things have changed over the last 3 years, right? You know, I think how we look at the world, how we look at our own jobs, you know, we've heard so much about the great resignation, people going on taking jobs for lesser pay because it gives them better work-life balance. And I hope that continues, right? I hope that continues. And I think if you want to make that change, you have to force that change, right? You know, big companies are not going to wake up one day and say, fantastic, I'm going to change this. They're only going to realize that when they see mass amounts of people demanding that change, either by way of resignation or because it's a revolt of sorts. And that's the same with governments as well. So, you know, I would say that my message is that if you have a voice, and your voice is influential, and your voice is loud, and people take it seriously, use that voice, use that influence properly to spread a much positive message. And my wish for Malaysia, like anybody, is I want to see a united country, right? You know, growing up in Malaysia, going to school, I had a very multicultural, multiracial upbringing. That is still very, very
tight. Accessibility shortcuts.
And in the school WhatsApp group, you know, I would like Malaysia to remain that way. I think that's what makes us quite unique. So I think lastly is just be kind to each other. I think that's quite important. And if you have a voice, don't feel afraid to voice it out.
Absolutely fantastic. Look, Jalil, it's been a really, really enjoyable episode. Great insights, and also you know, some fantastic views, not just about the corporate life, but outside life. And you've really stressed today on this Medeka special that no, it's not just about work, but it's about looking after what's important to you, which is family, friends, and just living that best balanced lifestyle to the highest matter possible, regardless of what position you're in, whether it's a manager, C-level or GM. So thank you so much for being on Great People TV. All the best for your new job. Don't ever be shy to send me a WhatsApp to come back to tell us more great stories about your next adventure and other adventures as well. Jalil Rashid, thank you so much for being on Great People TV tonight. Selamat Hari Merdeka.
Selamat Hari Merdeka, and thank you, man.
Great insights there by Jalil. What a day. Food for thought on Hari Merdeka. Well, on that note, we'll see you next week, everybody. Take care, and until the next episode of Great People TV.